Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Kicking off today's show on kind of a high note, story of a young woman who saw a need in accessibility and decided to fill it. So, here we have my on-location interview with St. Clair College student Aurora Fowler. This is Cam Wells here with
Aurora.
She's going to be telling us a little bit about a recent accessibility campaign she launched here at the college. So can you tell me a little bit about the initiative you started?
Sure. So it's just a ability or an idea to put some images that tell people on an elevator to leave priority access for people who need to use the elevator. So it's just a polite way of asking people to think about whether or not if they can use the stairs to leave the elevator for somebody who perhaps needs it to get to another floor.
What inspired you to want to get this in motion?
I was fortunate enough for a friend I made in first year to take me under her wing. And she uses a wheelchair, so she needs the elevators to get from class to class, and there were several occasions where we would be waiting for the elevators, me and her and another girl, and the elevator would open, and a bunch of students who visibly looked able-bodied, and I know that you can't tell everything just from that, but they would fill the elevator, and we wouldn't be able to fit in because her wheelchair is quite large, so we would have to wait for a second or third elevator. And there were times where it actually even made us late for class, or we couldn't get where we needed to go in a timely manner, and there would be, like, 10-minute delays simply because people were running in front of her to get in the elevator.
So do you think an incentive like this would have a positive impact on the students here?
I hope so. I believe that everybody wants to be helpful and that everybody wants to make the world better, but that sometimes we forget or just need a reminder or a little change in our environment to help us be a little more thoughtful. I don't think everyone is fortunate enough to have friends from a diverse background of abilities, and so maybe they don't get the opportunity to experience that firsthand like I did. So maybe that helps them think about that in lieu of having somebody to explain it to them.
In that sense, if they do honor this idea, mm-hmm. It's the same as saying, I respect your right to access. I respect that you're intelligent enough and capable enough to be here and to contribute as a functioning member of the college.
Absolutely. I think it's all of our responsibilities to try and help each other be the most aware of those things. And I think you do. We have smart, caring, compassionate, and active people here who I think, yeah, just need a little reminder sometimes, like we all do, to be considerate of others.
Speaking of reminders, you and your friend Cassandra recently reminded Ronald McDonald House of the importance of their work. Tell me a little about that.
Yeah, so that was from a class we had here at the college, which was event planning, and I was in a group. There's a few other people in the group as well, but we ended up doing a charity event fundraiser for Ronald McDonald House, Windsor, London, Essex, so it's the entire area, And we held just a pasta fundraiser. It was a lot of fun, though. We had a photo booth and a magician and, like, a kid's table and a raffle and an auction and a bunch of activities. And it was $20. And the community really, really rallied around it. We were really, really amazed at the number of people who were willing to come out on a Wednesday night to support this. But we ended up making, from between proceeds and donations, we ended up making $3,500, which was really exciting.
It sends a very powerful message about where your priorities are in terms of helping out others.
I think that there may be, but I think that more importantly, I think that the school really helped remind us and gave us that opportunity to do that. I think that I don't think that we're better than somebody who didn't. I just think that we were given the tools and the ideas and the guidance. Our professor, Nicole Rourke, did an amazing job of that.
I know her.
Yeah. And, and before, I sent an email for the elevator sticker idea to Cynthia Krupp, and then she had me come to the meeting and present the idea. And, you know, really what it was, I think, in both those cases was a happenstance of a group coming together, people having an idea around it, and everybody in the community rallying around something to make it a little bit better. And I feel really, really fortunate to have been part of both those things.
So what do you foresee for the future? Do you think you'll want to be involved with similar projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think coming to Windsor was a really interesting experience. I grew up in Toronto, where I think accessibility is a little bit more commonplace, and it was really shocking for me to come to Windsor and to see in the school and other areas how inaccessible so many things were. So I think that I would love to keep working with them, and I know there's so many constraints on everybody, but I'd love to keep trying to find just those small solutions that help make somebody's day a little bit easier, and to try and make things a little bit better. And I think everybody wants that. And
that's the thing. You can't be 100% accessible. Nothing is, but you're quite right. If you do take those little steps forward, you can make the world shine a little brighter bit by bit. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Of course.
Just remarkable to hear of a young person who actually thinks about something beyond their own needs. In this day and age, you tend to see it all too much. What's in it for me? What good will this do me? But here we have someone who genuinely showed just deep respect for individuals with disabilities, who stepped outside herself and said, we can do better, so let's do it. Next up, my friends, a little something about the Paralympics. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dominic Cozzolino, a Paralympic hockey player who wanted to share his story of getting a chance to be in the games. So tell me a little bit about what led you to this year's Paralympics.
Well, I had a spinal cord injury when I was 14 playing hockey. I've always really loved hockey, like since an early age, since I was 3 or 4. I've been playing. So when I had my injury at 14 and I had to give up playing, it just kind of didn't feel right to me. And when I found out about spike hockey, I kind of jumped all over the opportunity to get back into the game. And when I found out that there was an opportunity to represent my country and go to the Paralympics and play for Canada, I kind of have been working towards this goal ever since.
So as an athlete, do you find that it takes as much skill or precision to play sledge as it does just regulation hockey?
Yeah, you know what? I would say it's even a greater degree of skill and practice required. I mean, I think I've told my friends who play stand up at a high level, I think sledge hockey is probably the hardest sport in the world, just because you got to do so many different things at one time. You got to propel yourself with your arms while you're controlling the puck, right? So it's and you never get a break on your arms, whereas in stand-up hockey, use your legs to skate and your arms to control the puck. So you get a bit of a break on your muscles there, but sledge hockey, it's all with the arms.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you expect from representing Canada in the Paralympics?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you pull that jersey on, it's a special moment. Like, I've never taken it for granted. I mean, it's something I dreamed about since I was a young child, maybe in a different way, like playing in the NHL. But nonetheless, like, putting that jersey on is always a special moment. And to do it at the Paralympics is going to be even greater of a moment. Like, I'm pretty excited just to be able to feel that and get there. And it, like I said, it's always an honor to be able to represent your country.
So were there any challenges getting you there?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge was after the first few years after my injury, when I kind of didn't know what my recovery would look like, or at this point, I haven't even found out about sledge hockey. So, you know, I'm thinking that I'm done for hockey for good. But that was probably the toughest time. And then, honestly, once I found out about the opportunity I had to play in the Paralympics and to represent my country, you kind of just put everything else aside. You make that as your goal, and you just focus on working towards it.
So what's been the greatest success that you've experienced since taking up the sport?
Sorry, what was that?
Since you've taken up sledge hockey, what's been the greatest success moment you've seen?
Last season, we had a pretty big moment. We won the World Championships in Pyeongchang, where we're going to be playing the Paralympic Games. So that was a pretty special moment, especially for me. That was my first major championship gold, I guess. So that was a huge moment. And just especially to do it on the same ice that we're going back to this March, I mean, it was a pretty big deal for us.
So if you could send any message to all the athletes who might be struggling because of an acquired injury or disability, what would you say?
I would say never give up. I'd say as cliche as it sounds, I mean, you got to find that thing that's going to get you through those dark days, because you got to know that better ones are coming. I mean, you take my story for an example, and there's tons of them out there, but if you take mine for an example, if I didn't have a great support group around me and great family and friends to introduce me to sledge hockey, then I wouldn't have the motivation and be able to have that work ethic to get me to where I am. So, I mean, it's different for everyone, but I think you got to find what motivates you and find what's going to push you through those tough times, because better times are coming.
So what are the next steps for you as you get ready for the games?
I mean, every day is kind of looking the same right now, leading up to the games. It's just, wake up, eat a good meal, get to the gym, get on the ice, and then do it all over again. It's a lot of routine that goes into it now, this far in. So it's kind of just, right now, it's just counting down the days, honestly.
So, for the others on the team, have you forged any friendships or close associations with anybody?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're a really close group in the dressing room. I don't think there's anyone who's kind of on the outside. Like, we're a tight-knit group, and you know, I think it helps us on the ice.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWinsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Aurora Fowler, a student with a genuine passion for disabilities access, and Dominic Cusinato, member of Team Canada's sledge hockey team, the upcoming Paralympics. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Shan Johnson and Kristen Schramer. They'll be talking about some interesting initiatives for the Turner Syndrome Society. This is a post-dated interview, so some of the events referred to may already have passed. Syndrome. So what's the latest with the work on Turner Syndrome in the area?
Well, we have got a table at St. Clair College next week. St. Clair College is running its wellness fair. And so on Thursday, we are going to have a table with some information on Turner Syndrome. And the other thing is there was a newspaper article from the States. And the article was about a parent writing that her daughter with Turner Syndrome was made fun of by one of the teachers on a phone call. And so our one thing we're trying to reach out to, not just the medical community, but also the educational community. So I've kind of made my own little goal for this year, speaking to one medical professional and one teacher each month and telling them about Turner Syndrome.
Yeah, so we'll be at the St. Clair College kind of health fair. So we'll be there on February 8th from about 10:30 to about 1:30 p.m. Next week. We also have some really neat ideas for some upcoming fundraisers, so I would definitely recommend that you keep an eye out and or reach out to us if you're interested in learning more about them. But we are interested in throwing kind of a board game night. We would have people kind of come in and kind of pay admission to have a fun evening of board games, perhaps with some snacks. And we are also interested in the near future in kind of throwing a murder mystery kind of party, again, for where people could portray characters or become involved in trying to solve that murder mystery. So do keep an eye out. We do have a group on Facebook. So it is the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada, Windsor, Ontario group. So please like us and follow us for more information on upcoming events that we may be having in the future.
Wow. And please copy and post to your own Facebook and share that. We'd be very appreciative of that.
With these fundraising ideas, one of the things that really strikes me about it is that what Shan was saying about this teacher who didn't quite understand about Turner Syndrome, one of the best ways to really get to know the person first beyond just the condition is just to spend some time with them in a social or recreational setting. This might help to just sort of foster the idea that these are people of strength, character, and dignity as much as anyone else.
Absolutely, Cam. And that's one of the reasons why we're really excited about creating some events where that interaction can take place. And people can meet women and other individuals that are affected by Turner Syndrome, including, you know, parents of young girls. So that's one of the big things about these events that we're really excited about is allowing that connection and promoting awareness through that way and through education through these events.
So, in your recent efforts, has there been any success story of promoting awareness that you'd like to share?
Well, I think just the fact that you're interviewing us, the fact that we've got a table at the health fair, and I spoke to one of the women on staff here at the university who has taken our information and is going to call us for the fall health fair here at the University of Windsor. Another thing, I know those seem like small steps, but they're big steps for us.
Every victory counts.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd like people to keep aware of is in the last weekend of May, there is going to be the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada annual conference that's going to be held in Edmonton this year.
So, do you anticipate any challenges in raising awareness and things like the conference, getting people together to talk about these issues?
I think one thing is destigmatism. I know that a lot of women and girls with Turner syndrome are probably fairly maybe shy about talking about Turner syndrome. So one thing that was posted to our Facebook just the other day was, who can I talk to one-on-one and tell them a little bit about Turner syndrome? And that maybe breaks down a little bit of the stigmatism that is unnecessarily attached to it.
That's one of the things, though. How is it that we as a people have compassion if we see somebody who has difficulty moving, but we don't look beyond the surface for things like Turner syndrome? Ask the question, this person may have this limitation, but what are they capable of? What can they bring to society that might make us actually embrace diversity?
Well, I mean, Stephanie and Kristen are two wonderful examples.
Agreed.
Of women with Turner syndrome who just reach out with everything they've got, educationally, emotionally, energy-wise. I'm so grateful and proud to know both of these women and cheering them on as to what they're achieving. I'm a little bit older than them, and so I kind of see myself as a big sister auntie cheerleader, but I'm just so proud to know these two women.
And we're so very proud to know you, Shan. Shan has really, I think, energized our group here in Windsor and has really guided, I think, a lot of these wonderful efforts that our group is putting forward. And so it's amazing. And she sets these goals for herself, such as reaching out to a medical physician and a teacher. And she meets those goals every single time and is really spreading awareness and making people aware, and her efforts at outreach have just been amazing. And so I want to commend her for that and let her know that we are so proud of all of the effort and energy that she's really put into all of these wonderful things that our group is doing and is working forward with promoting awareness.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Did you notice the pattern, folks? All today's interviews referred to support systems, having people working together to make things better for people with disabilities. Whether it be just respecting their right to access or helping them find that when you acquire a disability, life is not over. There are still possibilities. There are still games to be played, stories to be told. Or, if it's looking at the future, bringing a greater awareness to something It's not on the tip of the public's tongue, but doing so in an accessible way, in creating events and awareness, the world has to take notice. It has to be something that people can relate to. Now, our friends at the Turner Syndrome Society, they're coming up with some very creative methods, and there's something that the public can come and enjoy and just be a part of. Past a certain point, disability is not your central focus anymore, as it shouldn't be. But the fact is, things like what Aurora did in getting priority access for people with disabilities for the elevators, that really is a remarkable gift, because it's somebody who wouldn't necessarily personally profit by it, stepping outside herself and sending a message, hey, these people are here too, and they have just as much right to learn, just as much right to be heard. And pursuant to that, her work with her friend Cassandra Marchand was just really an amazing thing. Putting together a pasta dinner, raising thousands of dollars for Ronald McDonald House. That was just an extraordinary act. I love hearing stories like that, of people stepping outside themselves, taking the time to stand with a person with a disability and to recognize their right to access, their right to be heard, the right to be a part of it all. For Dominic, coming up, his participation in the sport is just going to be a remarkable thing, because that is, in disability life, a stage we all tend to take notice of. It's a platform by which these athletes just get in there and have a great time. They put on a great show with strength, skill, speed, agility, all the things you'd expect from an athlete. Maybe some of the equipment's a little different, but I have just one question about that. Who cares? If it's a great game, it's a great game. If you enjoy watching it, you enjoy watching it. There's no difference. If you take the disability out of the equation, it's just a great athletic competition. And nobody has an unfair advantage. Some people still labor under the impression that disabilities athletics are in some way slanted, or that these athletes are just given medals or trophies based on the fact that they have a disability. No, they're out there against people of similar ability levels. They're playing their game, and they're enjoying it. It really is a matter of bringing together just athletes who can have a good competition, maybe make some new friends, maybe even have some fun. But the point is, a person with a disability need never look at the equation and say, my life is over because I acquired an injury. They must never think there are no possibilities. There's always a step forward to be taken. Maybe not what you would call an immediate cure, but something to better your life, something to give you hope. You find enough of those, and you build up quite a bit. You become stronger, not just as a person with a disability. You become stronger as a person. And it's not relegated to one aspect of who you are. It's something you carry in all facets of life. You recognize that you have dignity and importance in this world. And recognizing that, you can carry that with you and make real change. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.